Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
It's Sunday night. It's time for the hottest alternative talk radio on the planet. Welcome to Beyond the Edge Radio. Two hours of fascinating guests, mind-blowing topics, and stimulating conversation. All here on your home for the best alternative talk radio. This is Beyond the Edge Radio. Nervous? Scared? Don't be afraid. The wait will be over soon. Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network. It is Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, straight up, and it's March the 9th. Welcome to tonight's show. Got a great show in store for everybody tonight, but before we announce tonight's guest, let's welcome in, as always, your co-host with the most from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, the one and only Lon Strickler. Good evening, Lon. How are you tonight, my friend?
Hey, Eric. I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. And your week's been going pretty well?
Yeah, busy, but, you know, that's par for the course, so.
Aren't they all?
They are.
They keep us out of trouble for the most part.
I try.
Well, are you ready for a great show tonight?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. We've got a great guest joining us on the program tonight, and she'll be coming on in about 28 minutes from now. Her name is Karen Dolan. You can visit her website, karendolan.com. That's spelled KarynDolan.com. She is a UFO and paranormal investigator, a lecturer, and she hosts her own radio program Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network. And tonight she's going to be talking with us, Lon, about how the paranormal connects to UFOs and UFO sightings.
Yeah, it'll be quite interesting. I've been looking forward to this all week.
I have as well, and I've met Karen in person. I met her at the Pittsburgh MUFON UFO conference a few years back. She was there. Her former husband, Richard Dolan, was there. I believe, I want to say Stanton Friedman was there.
Probably was.
Travis Walton was there. It was a stellar lineup they had there at the conference, and Karen and I chatted a little bit. And back then, a couple years back, she agreed to come on the show, and we finally have her booked for tonight.
Very good.
So we're looking forward to it. Next week's guest, just to throw this out there very quickly, he is known probably best from the TV shows Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International. He's the founder of Patch Ministries, and he's also become a motivational speaker. He's what they call the rock and roll ghost hunter, or the rock star ghost hunter. Dustin Perry will join us on the show next week.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with Dustin, but from what you describe and what I've been doing some initial research on it, it should be a very interesting presentation he's going to give us.
I'm looking forward to talking to Dustin. Thanks to our paranormal news correspondent, Amy Perry. She is friends with Dustin and got us hooked up with him, and he will be coming on the show in next week. So it's going to be a great time to talk with Dustin and find out about his work with GHI, GH, and what he's been doing as of late.
Oh, very good.
He'll actually be, just found this out too, he'll be appearing at Phenomicon this year in April out in Gettysburg. To learn about who all is going to be at Phenomicon, you can go to their website, phenomiconcentral.com, and that'll give you a list of everybody who's going to be in attendance. But very quickly, one event I do want to mention coming up next weekend before we get into talking about what's been going on in the paranormal is the Cabela's Strange, Rare, and Unusual Sighting Seminar, scheduled to take place this coming weekend, March 14th, 15th, and 16th at the Tridelphia, West Virginia, better known as the Wheeling, West Virginia, Cabela's store. It's located at 1 Cabela Drive, Tridelphia, West Virginia. And the keynote speaker, going to be appearing both days, Saturday and Sunday, is Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, anthropologist and primate anatomist from Idaho State University and probably one of the most recognized scientific authorities in the Bigfoot study field.
Yes, he is. I'd really love to have a chance to talk to him sometime, but to be quite honest, I've just never run into him.
You will. One of these days, you'll meet up with him. Great guy. I've talked to Jeff on many, many occasions. He's attended many conferences. He was my guest at the 2011 Pittsburgh UFO Bigfoot Conference we held, and he's spoken at Cabela's now twice, 2 years in a row, and he's making his rounds on the East Coast, a good friend of mine, and he'll be there as the keynote speaker. Other speakers for the event will be Steve Calls, the Squatch Detective, who's appeared here on our show several times before. Our good friend Stan Gordon, paranormal UFO and Bigfoot researcher from here in my home state of Pennsylvania. Our good friend from Sasquatch Watch of Virginia, Billy Willard. Doug Waller from SOSBI, which is the Southeastern Ohio Bigfoot Investigations, I think. The acronyms get to me. They do. But he's from a group called SOSBI, and Doug will be speaking, and I will be speaking as well. Unfortunately, our good friend Dave Dragazin will not be attending. He's actually recovering from quintuplet bypass surgery.
Yeah, I saw. I'm hoping he's doing better. He seemed like he, on his video he was doing better.
I did get a chance to talk with him. He is home. He is resting and mending. He's in good spirits, as you saw by the video on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And he's going to bow out of the Cabela's event so that he can heal up and you know get back to normal again. So we want to send our best well wishes for a speedy recovery to our good friend Dave Dragazin. Also going on at the Cabela's event, they will have a meet-and-greet open forum with all the guest speakers on Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. That'll be located in the second-floor conference room. They will have speakers all day Saturday and Sunday. All the speakers will be doing two presentations. There will be giveaways, including game cameras and other great Cabela prizes. There will be the vendor's room, which will be open both days as well. And the event is completely 100% free. So there's no charge to attend, stop into Cabela's, do a little shopping, pick up some cool gear, and stop by and say hello to all of us. The speakers are going to be there. Meet Dr. Meldrum, Steve Calls, Stan, Billy, Doug, myself, and there'll be other paranormal investigators on hand like Brian and Terry Seach, Fred Saluga, Dave Rupert, Ryan Cavallini. There's going to be a whole plethora of people there, so make sure you stop by. To find out more about that, the big event coming up this coming weekend, go to Cabela's.com, Cabela's.com. Click on the Find a Store tab, select the Wheeling, West Virginia store, and then scroll down to the events. You'll see it right there. Pretty simple.
Sounds like a good presentation. It'll be an interesting weekend.
It should be. They're a lot of fun. We always have fun, and the whole gang from the East Coast pretty much gets together and hangs out, and mm-hmm. we have a good laugh and put some good presentations on. So come learn about Sasquatch and strange animals. George Lutz will be there. Or not George Lutz.
John Lutz.
John Lutz, thank you. John Lutz. He is a Eastern Cougar researcher, and he also appeared on the episode of Monsters and Mysteries with you 2 weeks back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. Yeah, that was the first time I had gotten to meet John. Quite an interesting guy. He really mm-hmm. is. Really knows about, you know, Bigfoot and, you know, this thing with the cougar and eastern puma research he's doing. I mean, I was really fascinated to learn about that. I mean, and I'm quite sure there are going to be a lot of people interested to hear what he has to say.
He's not actually speaking, but he will have a vendor's table. So
okay.
We invite you to stop
talk,
by.
Believe me. Yeah. You just answer a question. He'll talk.
Yeah. Yep. So stop down to the Cabela's event this weekend, the Weird, Strange, and Unusual Sightings Weekend held at the Wheeling, West Virginia Cabela's. Completely free, folks. It's going to be a great time. And that's about all I have for announcements, guests, and events coming up. So let's chit-chat a little bit about what's been going on in the world of the paranormal, Lon.
Well, I had a few oddball things come into me this week. I think the neatest one was... An eyewitness report I received out of Melbourne, Australia. Creature never heard of before, something unknown, and maybe somebody can give us a hand in finding out what this was. I call it the Mullum Mullum Creek Beast. The letter went like this. I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and have a pretty interesting story to tell. I've been scouring the internet of late to see if there was any similar post to my experience, but I couldn't find any. It's not a story. It's a true event that occurred around 2001. My mom and two brothers and I moved to a small townhouse in Ringwood, directly across from Mullamoma Creek Trail, which is a small creek system that runs through Victoria. It has cool trails and bushwalking for a busy city person. And it is, I've seen some pictures of it. It's a really nice area. All was fine and dandy until I finished school in 2001. And then pretty much straight away, I got a job as a baker. They needed me to start work at 1 a.m. in the morning, so I used to get up and ready for work at 12 a.m., then go outside for a smoke. This is when I started hearing strange, chilling sounds coming from the creek. I had never heard these sounds in the daytime. It was like a pig in real distress, but really deep. It sent chills down my spine. I just passed it off as maybe a wild pig or koala because they could sound somewhat strange at times. After my smoke, I would have to bravely leave the house all alone and walk to work, always looking behind in fear I might see the thing making the noise. So a couple of weeks passed by. I would get up and experience the same thing every night. Eventually, I started telling other people about it. The first person was my brother. He started getting up with me and hearing it for himself. He became intensely frightened of the dark from that moment on. Then I would have friends come around. They would hear it too, and they would say that I couldn't live by the creek. Good luck, you know. Anyway, I got so used to it. I just wasn't scared anymore until one night at about 9 p.m., my brother and I had a massive fight with our mother. She kicked us out of the house. So it was still light because of daylight savings time. So we needed to go somewhere to sit for a while. So we thought begrudgingly the creek might be, you know, it was a spot we knew and there were park benches there. So we headed down. We got to our destination in the trail, sat down, just started chatting until dark. And then there was a little bit of light filtering through the pine trees onto us from a house. So I felt pretty comfortable. Behind us was a massive umbrella tree. Not sure if anybody knows what it looks like, but they have a huge long branches that drape to the ground, creating a huge empty space underneath. Anyway, as we were sitting, I started to hear rustling coming from the tree. So I kept looking behind us, and I started to get a little frightened at the noise. As the noise started to get louder and louder. But this time we were fixated on that tree, and then it happened. The most terrifying event of my life. Something the size of a red kangaroo came dashing out from that bloody tree. It was too dark to make sense of what it was as it ran at us, and I mean it ran at us, blaring out a rancid screech, which sounded like the one I had been hearing for weeks. I forgot to mention that we had our dog with us. When this thing screamed, my dog turned and started barking at it. I got up and ran for my life, my brother close behind, screaming in sheer terror. The dog turned tail, except for occasional bark or whatever it was. I regret I didn't have a second look at it. We didn't stop running until we got back to the house. We almost knocked down the door trying to get in. I didn't sleep for weeks after this encounter. Neither did my brother. I did not go back down to the creek ever again, and I chose to ignore anything I heard from that point there on. Still to this day, I'm scared of the dark. I'll never know what this thing was because the creek has been developed into a highway. I wonder what happened to it. And, I looked and they did. There is a highway now that kind of it was built over across the creek, you know, like a bridge or like an overpass. So, but it's still a pretty, really nice area. But I don't know what that was. I'm quite frank, I don't know how big a red kangaroo is. I think it's a smaller kangaroo. But God knows what they ran into.
It sounds like it might have been a rabid kangaroo.
I don't know. I don't know. Do they have rabies down there?
I don't know.
I know they don't have it like in Great Britain, and I know some of these countries are really tight about, you know, stuff coming in from the U.S. because of rabies, but maybe they do, but I don't know what this was they saw. So that was quite an interesting story. I did check a few things because I, you know, the wildlife of Australia, I'm not really, you know, I'm not an expert at it. So maybe one of these crypto Fortean people that know the wildlife can give me an idea, or if they have any ideas what this was, I'd be interested to find out.
Yeah, me too.
What they have to think.
I'd like to see what they have to say about that. That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was. So no. That was something new. This week, now, Butch Witkowski, who was on the show several weeks ago, who is the director of the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania, he started to publish a newsletter that he and the late Elaine Douglas, who was actually the MUFON director in Colorado for a long time, and she was she did a lot of research into abductions, a lot of research. Well, her and Butch had discussed about creating a journal. I think it had the journal. It was called the Journal of Abnormal Abduction Research. At one time, I think that, you know, she did have it, but I think she stopped it for whatever reason. I don't know if it was because of her health or what it was. Mm-hmm. But Butch tried, you know, he's just been wanting to get this going again. So a couple weeks ago, or about a week ago, he went ahead and released the first issue. And it's going to be a bi-monthly update that deals with various cases surrounding abnormal abductions and other related phenomena. It says that we're dedicated to investigating and understanding reported encounters. The journal will feature writings from researchers, both here and abroad, case studies, landmark cases, and support groups will also be highlighted in the journal. And he's dedicating it to Elaine Douglas, who was actually the Utah director for the UFO research. Excuse me here a second. Yeah, the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania. Okay. So, you know, she was doing investigations for his group out there. So, you know, it's I read the first issue. You can go to the website at it's UFORCP.com. And you can go ahead and go to, you know, you can go to the website of UFOs Research Center of Pennsylvania, and you'll see a link there for JAR, G-A-A-R, which is a Journal of Abnormal Abduction Research, and click it on, and it's a nice PDF format. It's really, really a lot of good information in there. So if you're interested in that type of thing, I suggest you look at it. I was really impressed with it.
I have not read it yet. I've seen it advertised and published, so I'll have to check that out. Very cool.
Yeah, it's a really good issue. It was, you know, it's, and I tell you, even the website, their website is really nice. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody should check that out.
Yeah, take a look at it.
I haven't really had any anything else. I did have somebody forward something of this girl who had actually had these strange symbols show up on her legs. They kind of like luminescent because she only saw them after a black light was put close to it. And we've been trying to figure it out what it is. The symbols are kind of strange. They kind of remind me of some type of ruin alphabet, but my friend in Australia, Oz, he He said he looked closer to him, like Celtic Ogham alphabet. And he showed me he showed me an example of it, and it does. It really does look a lot like
it.
And I don't think they're Norse runes, but I think that the Celtic Ogham may be what it is. So we're checking into that. That's pretty strange. And actually, it was on both the girls' calves. I did post pictures of it on the blog.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
That's so very strange.
Well, look at that. Go over there and check it out.
Yeah. I just really quickly wanted to talk about the case that I investigated today, if we still have a few minutes to do that, and invite everybody to take a look at the photos and the video that's up on my Facebook page that's posted. You can go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ Eric.Altman1970. That's Eric, E-R-I-C, dot Altman, A-L-T-M-A-N, 1970. And if you click on the photos album section, there's a video there I posted today, and then a video that's the photo album is entitled, what is it here? It's called The Bigfoot Paranormal Investigation 3-9-2014. You can look at some of the photos. And basically what this was in the fall, we had received a phone call from a gentleman who had claimed to have had a sighting not far from his home where some kind of large black figure that he described today when we talked to him as being ape-like or upright walking like a man, but more ape-like looking, arms down at its sides, swinging as it quickly crossed the road, came down off an embankment, very quickly crossed the road to the other side and into an open wooded area. He quickly drove faster to catch up to this thing. He stopped the car where it crossed the road, got out, and ran to the edge of the road to look, and there was nothing there. He didn't see anything. This thing didn't disappear in any caves. Now, there's a hole near a quarry up there that it could have jumped into, but he didn't see it. So we got that report in November, and unfortunately, with my schedule the way it was, I wasn't able to follow up, being that it was an older report. So we told him, if anything else happens, let us know. Well, apparently, talking to neighbors that live within a couple hundred yards of each other, he learned very quickly that other neighbors were having some other unusual paranormal activity. They were seeing strange lights in the sky, such as a long silver cylinder-shaped object that quickly flew in just above the pine tree tops, maybe 100 feet, 150 feet in the air, stopped, paused for a second, and then took off into the darkness of the sky. Several people saw that. That happened this past January. They saw that. They also saw what looked to be a figure standing behind a tree late one night, also in January of this year, 2014, where this supposed creature or figure, whatever it was, leaned out from behind the tree and was looking at them. They had heard rustling in the brush, and when their attention was turned to the tree line, that's when they saw this thing leaning out. And they said the light yard was illuminating its eye shine, or its eyes, causing its eyes to shine back a very dark red in color. And they didn't see it or hear it run off. It just kind of ducked back in behind the tree, and that's the last they saw of it. They showed us pictures of impressions in the ground, which were in the shape of a foot. However, there was no definition to it. There was no toes in the track. It just looked like an oblong impression in the ground, possibly a weathered track. We can't say, but they found those. The family I talked to, the father and the two children, told us about multiple paranormal experiences, including footfalls in their home, seeing like a soldier, like a Revolutionary War or Civil War soldier appearing in their home. One girl claimed that she saw a black mass start to form behind a relative that was sitting on the computer. It started to, like a ball or a round circle started to appear behind him, and it got larger and larger and dissipated. They've claimed they've heard voices in the house, like people are home and having conversations, but nobody's there. So it was a very interesting investigation. The thing that intrigued me the most was a video that was shared with us and actually given to us by the woman who lives in the front house on the road. She lives in front, and then there's the other houses behind hers. She claimed, along with the other neighbors, that they had heard screams emanating from the woods on several different occasions, very loud, high-pitched, female-like shrieks and screams from time to time. And when that would happen, her animals would go crazy. The dogs would hide. The cat would hide. So she wasn't sure to make of it. So Being that they feed a lot of animals, deer, the other wild animals, cats, dogs, all that, with different food they leave out for them, something was coming up on their back porch almost on a nightly basis. And she wanted to find out what this thing was. So in July of 2012, she put a game camera out there, a wild game camera that she purchased from Walmart that has video capabilities to it. Now, this is the kind of camera that doesn't start to record the instant it turns on. It fires up and then starts to record. So you lose a second or two of whatever's coming across in front of the camera. And she shared with us a very interesting video that if you go to my Facebook page, as I said, Eric.Altman1970, and check out the video there, you'll be able to see it. It's about 30 seconds long, and it starts right off with this black, shaggy, hairy animal in the left frame of the video moving very quickly to the right and disappearing from the camera view. It's only in the camera view for about 4 or 5 seconds. I've had people tell me it's a squirrel, it's a cat, it's a dog, it's a bear. Somebody speculated it's a bad costume. The fur looks very matted and in some places looks kind of shaggy. You've seen the video, Lon.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting video. I don't know what it is. I can't say for sure if it's a cat. People are saying they see an elbow of a Sasquatch. People are saying they see the tail of a cat or the fur of a dog. So there's a variety of different opinions about it. If you'd like to check that out, you can go to my Facebook page and click on the photo album, and you'll see the video there and take a look at it. And I'd love to hear your feedback on it. I'd love to hear what you think.
Well, you know, it's I don't think it's a bear unless you've got grizzlies up there.
No, black bear, but no. No,
yeah, and because it's kind of got a reddish tint to it, you know, it's got a heavy undercoat.
It does,
and it's got guard hairs that do come out of it, almost like a dog. But you know, I don't know. You know, that would be the only thing that I would say it could be, other than maybe a Sasquatch. I mean, maybe it is one, but because the hair does look pretty good. But I don't know. It does look like the camera was set down fairly closer to the ground.
Yeah.
And it does look like it may actually be a thigh or
a leg
Part of, yeah, some part of the leg. So I don't know. But it is an interesting, very interesting video. And, you know, it did get some good detail in the hair. So
yeah, for the few seconds that you see it. Now,
yeah.
I'll go on record in saying I don't know what it is. There's not enough detail in the video to tell how tall this animal is, how wide. What puzzles me is you mentioned the thick undercoat. This is taken in July of 2012. You'll see on the date stamped on the camera. So why would an animal have a thick undercoat in July? That doesn't make much sense.
Just it. Yeah, and you know, I can't think of any wild animal that would. You know, other than, like, again, maybe a Sasquatch. I mean, would have that thick undercoat.
I don't know.
I don't know of any wild animals in Pennsylvania that have that.
And, now, from the skeptical side of things, I will say that the family did tell us that they feed many, many wild animals. They have deer come in their yard. They feed at least 200 pounds of corn to the deer on, I think, a weekly basis.
Jeez.
They have a lot of food they pick up from, you know, throwing out scraps of bread and food and stuff they feed some of the wild animals. So it doesn't surprise me that there would be a wild animal coming around their home.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a very wooded area. It's very notorious for sightings. And I think even Stan was pretty certain today that he had investigated a Bigfoot sighting report on that property back in 1973.
Mm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Not sure what to make of the case today. It's still being investigated. We still have to follow up with the family. But if you would like to see the pictures and the video, again, my Facebook, Eric, ERIC.Altman, ALTMAN, 1970, on Facebook. And you'll find me there. You can friend me if you like, or you can just go to the photos. They're public and check them out. And just leave your opinion. I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, it looks like it. You know, it's an area that has a lot of things going on, like a lot of other areas around there, so who knows?
It's definitely different. Definitely different, and especially with everything else they claimed that was going on, the haunting and the UFO sightings and the different sounds. And what topped it all off, and you'll see in the last picture, if you do check it out, the last two pictures, as we were leaving the neighbors' homes, we were driving down the mountain to head back into town. We were told that there was a Sasquatch or Bigfoot crossing sign on the road, and we looked for it. We didn't see it, so we were kind of like, okay, well, maybe we missed it. And as we slowed down, and sure enough, there is a wood-carved Sasquatch sign. Somebody took a wood sign and put two big footprints on it and put in the middle Bigfoot crossing. So I know the area's had a lot of Bigfoot sightings. I've investigated a lot of sightings up there over the years, and apparently the neighbors up there know more than we do. So it was a very interesting day out with Stan Gordon today.
Yep, that area has had a long history of weird things.
Yep, definitely has. So, all right, that's all I have for everybody today. I think you're pretty much wrapped up for the week as well. Sean Forker, our co-host and color commentator, has not joined us yet. He is running late from work, and hopefully he'll be joining us a little bit later in the program. And we may have Amy Perry jumping on board as well to help us out with questions from the chat room. So we'll find out after the break if they're going to be joining us. But tonight's guest on the program is a paranormal enthusiast, a researcher, investigator, a UFO investigator, an author, and she does her own radio program, which is Beyond the Keyhole. I believe it's Beyond the Keyhole. Through the Keyhole, excuse me. Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network. She started that in 2007. She is a lecturer. She's spoken at many MUFON events and around the country at different events. You can go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, and on the main page you can scroll down. There's a bio about Karen Dolan. Check that out. Or you can go to her website, which is Karen, spelled K-A-R-Y-N, K-A-R-Y-N, Dolan, D-O-L-A-N, KarenDolan.com is her website. Check that out. And she's going to be joining us after the break, Lon.
Let's get to it.
All right. Let's jump into our first break of the night, folks. You are listening to Beyond the Edge Radio live here on the Para X Radio Network. My name is Eric Altman. Along with me, your co-host, Sean Forker. He'll be here with us, hopefully. Lon Strickler is with us, though. And we'll be back after the break with more of the best alternative talk radio after this.
Kick back. Relax. And crack a cold one. Beyond the Edge Radio, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the program. This is Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para X Radio Network. It's Sunday night, 8:38. Happy March 9th to you. A beautiful March 9th for a change. A beautiful Sunday for a change.
No snow.
And the temperatures actually got above freezing today, so it was a nice day for a change. And we're going to have a great show tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun talking with our guest, Karen Dolan. To find out more about Karen, you can go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, and there's a bio there, a couple of pictures of Karen posing with George Norrie and one of her beautiful cats. And her website is karendolan.com. That's spelled with a Y, K-A-R-Y-N-D-O-L-A-N.com. And Karen has been gracious enough to join us tonight to talk to us on the show about her research into UFOs and the paranormal. And maybe we'll even get to talk a little bit about a radio show through the keyhole. So we're very excited to welcome Karen to the program. Good evening, Karen. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking me to be on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're glad you were able to join us. I know we had discussed many moons ago. We were at a MUFON conference together, and we discussed having you come on the program. And finally it worked out. We got you on the show tonight.
Yeah. You know what? I was loving what you were saying about the weather being so beautiful today. It's gorgeous up here in Rochester today, too.
Oh, good. Fantastic. I was a little worried because I know you're closer to the Lake Erie and toward the Canadian border where it gets a little more snow up there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's melting. I'm happy.
Good. That's a great thing.
I'm trying not to look outside too much, but it is melting. So.
We're all suffering from those winter blues and the doldrum depression, so it's going away.
Yes.
All right, let's get into the conversation if we could, Karen. You've been a paranormal researcher for quite a number of years now, and I would like to know, just out of my own personal curiosity, what got you involved in it? Why were you so willing to fall into that rabbit hole?
That's a really good question. I've just always loved reading ghost stories when I was a kid, and as I got older, and I can't remember now how I first found out that there are actual really do paranormal investigations. They go into haunted houses and conduct formal investigations. When I found out about that, I thought, oh my gosh, this is awesome. I want to do this. There's a meetup group here in Rochester that I connected with, and they used to be called the Phantom Finders. And
okay.
Now I think they changed their name to Rochester Paranormal Research. It's more serious, I guess. Terrific group of people. And they go, they make trips to a lot of haunted locations in this area. Rochester actually has quite a lot of history. I mean, it's a very historical place anyway. It's at the crossroads of the Genesee River, which runs across, north-south across most of the state, and the Erie Canal, which runs east and west across most of the state. And we're also right on the edge of Lake Ontario, so through the Great Lakes, we're connected with the Atlantic Ocean on one side and, well into the Midwest of the country on the other. So it was this huge shipping hub really early on. It was a pretty cosmopolitan place. It was very big as a stop on the Underground Railroad, so there's a lot of history there. Kate and Maggie Fox, the founders of Spiritualism, lived here in Rochester.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, right in my neighborhood.
Oh,
I'm living
wow.
like 10 minutes from some of the places where they lived.
Oh, right.
I read a history of their lives recently, and apparently they lived with an older sister who kept moving from one apartment to another as she earned more money, she'd move to a nicer place. But they were all like within a few blocks of each other.
Nice.
and that's where I am. And it's so cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So you have kind of a historic background to fall back on as far as the paranormal goes. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot here. I mean, and through contact with this meetup group, I mean, they know all kinds of local sites. And as I said, there was a lot of coming and going. There was a great deal of traffic. People would come, farmers would come up here bringing their grain up, and they'd have it milled here, and then the flour would be shipped out. So there was just a lot of coming and going between here and Canada as well. I mean, it was just a lot of traffic. And so this wasn't like really in the backwoods. I mean, when I was growing up, I thought, oh, Rochester's in the middle of nowhere. I got to get out of here.
Right, right.
But apparently in the 19th century, this was like the place to be.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it was a bustling town back then.
Yeah, I think it really was. So
well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and with all that history, with so many people coming and going and so many big things happening in their lives, there's a lot of there are just a million stories about various hauntings in different places. They're all, Durand Eastman Park is haunted. Cobbs Hill Park is haunted. Of course, we got the Mount Hope Cemetery, which is huge, and all these famous people are buried in there, and that's supposed to be haunted. There are lots of stories about that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of hard to grow up here and not be interested in it, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Sounds like pretty much everywhere you turn, something's haunted.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I'm driving around, I'm like, oh, my gosh. Oh, there's a park. I heard that's haunted. Oh, yeah, that one's supposed to be haunted. Oh, there's Lake Ontario. There's supposed to be all these UFO sightings.
Yeah.
I've received a lot of them from that area.
Yeah. Lake Erie, Lake Ontario. Yeah, there's a lot.
Wow. So you're pretty much in the triangle right there.
You got
that whole area.
Yeah.
Very, very neat. I'm curious if you could tell us, and I've never been to Rochester. I've been up in western New York and moving into central New York a couple of times just passing through. But I've never stopped, and I'm not real familiar of where some of these hauntings would take place. Is there one that stands out to you or one that jumps out in your memory that you would probably have to say is the most haunted place that you're aware of?
It's hard for me to say. I've visited a few of these places, and if any of the people from the meetup are listening to me, they're probably all screaming at the radio right now, because I'm sure, they know more of these places. I've visited several, but the one where I got the most feedback, I guess, had the best experience, was at the Valentown Museum in Victor. And Victor is this tiny, tiny little town about a half hour drive south of here. And in fact, it's where I grew up. And there's this old museum that nearly was taken down. It was practically falling down. And then it was declared a historic landmark, like at the last minute.
Okay.
So it's still standing. But it's this very old building, three floors. You can go up to the top of it, and like there are gaps between the boards. It's icy cold. There's no insulation or anything. It's just this really, really old building.
Oh, so they didn't renovate it once they made it a historical landmark?
Not really. They have more maintained it.
Okay.
As it was. There's like a gift shop on the ground floor, and they've fixed it up a bit, but the upper floors and the basement are pretty much, my impression is they're pretty much the way they were originally built.
Sure.
And actually, that one, I think they did an episode of Ghost Hunters.
Oh, okay. I didn't know
that. At Allentown. So some people may have seen that. And in October, they would have people come in and they'd do ghost walks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd have guided tours, and or if you wanted to, you could just go up to the third floor by yourself and just kind of hang out quietly and see if you see anything. And I was up there on the third floor. Actually, I took my kids up there. This mommy of the year here. I'm taking my kids out. Middle of the night. I did make them dress really warmly. So that's like the only good thing I did. But yeah, it was like 11:30, midnight, you know, pitch black, freezing cold. And we're standing up in this unheated, uninsulated barn, feeling the wind whistle through. And everybody's just standing there in this very dim light. There were maybe 10 people all together up there when we went up. And I'm just standing there, and we're all trying to be really quiet, you know, and nothing's happening. And I was just starting to think, this is a bust. I'm not getting anything. And my daughter turns to me, and she said, Mom, was that you? And I said, what? And she said, somebody just walked past me. Was it? Tell me that was you. And I said, no, I didn't move. I was like a foot away from her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, honey, you're wearing like six pairs of pants and snow pants. And if I had brushed past you, I don't think you would have felt it.
True.
Yeah. So my son was on my other side. He didn't feel anything. And a couple people around us said, oh, no, they didn't either.
Uh-huh.
But it was as if somebody had walked through this foot wide space between us.
Oh, wow.
And my daughter said she thought it was like it was low, like somebody small, like maybe a child. And I thought, well, I don't know what to think about it. But we went downstairs and some of the staff said, oh, yeah, there's a ghost of a little girl, Sarah. Did you see her?
Wow.
And I said, well, I didn't, but I think my daughter did. And they said, oh, yeah, she's kind of shy. She won't appear to very many people, but usually women or kids.
Huh.
So she picked the smallest person up there, and yep, she fit right in with everything that they said about her.
Wow, that's so kind of neat.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, but I'm a little disappointed because I didn't see anything. I didn't feel it. You know?
Now, is your daughter into the paranormal now because of her experience?
She's not as much into it as I am, but she's certainly open to it. The thing about my kids is like they both grew up not thinking there was anything odd about it.
Sure.
So for them, it's
thing.
Like, what? You know, big deal.
Right.
So, yeah, so I think it's less interesting for them because it's, for me, it's exciting because it's unusual and it's different and it's, you know, it's kind of out there, so it's fun. And to them, it's every day.
And plus, it's validation
deal.
For you and for your daughter. I mean,
uh-huh.
You went to this haunted location and really weren't expecting something to happen. Something
yeah.
did happen, and then you were able to confirm it with the people downstairs saying, yes, there is a little girl that,
mm-hmm.
that has been seen. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and we didn't go down and say, well, we think we might have felt something, and we think maybe it was a child. And,
right.
You know, we didn't give them anything. We went downstairs, and they said, so did you see Sarah? And I said, what? Who's Sarah? And they said, the little girl ghost up there. Did you see her?
There you go.
And I said, oh, my gosh.
There's your validation. That's
yeah.
kind of neat, though.
Yeah.
That's neat.
And I heard, actually, an EVP in one of the buildings next to the museum.
Okay.
We did a session. This was part of the guided tour thing. And I was really thinking, oh my gosh, I got to keep a close eye on this. I can't remember who the man was, and I apologize for thinking this, but I'd never been on an investigation at that time where we did record EVPs. This was my first experience with it. Mm-hmm. I knew what it was, but I hadn't done it. So we're in this room. There were probably 15 adults. There were no kids with us at that time. And we're all sitting around. It was a house, like somebody's home, who had been connected with the museum at some point. So we're sitting around their dining room table in the dark, and we had a bunch of little handheld digital recorders they set on the dining room table. And the man who was running the tour explained how EVPs work, and he would ask questions, or he'd say, is anyone here? Would you like to speak to us? And then he'd wait. And we could see the little lights on the recorders coming on and off the way they do when someone's speaking. I mean, they were voice activated. And you could see the lights coming on, although we couldn't hear anything. And that was a little freaky in itself. And while we were listening, while we were all sitting there afraid to move a muscle because nobody wanted to make a sound that would cause a problem, you know, I could hear a car drive past outside. And the road made a right angle turn right outside the window. And I could hear it crunching on gravel, and I could hear the car on that turn. And part of my head was saying, okay, when, you know, this guy might have faked something to make the tour go well. So mm-hmm. we get results, so we're all happy. I said, if he's got something recorded on there already, I'm going to listen for the sound of that car going by, because there's no way if he recorded that, it would erase whatever he'd already put on there.
Sure.
Right? You can't get both. I mean, right. You could do it with a mixer and a sound studio and everything. Mm-hmm. I get that. Not with the kind of recorders he was using. So he goes to play it back, and it sounded like we were in a room full of little kids.
Oh, wow.
It was like being in a classroom. You know, you hear all these little voices talking to each other. And huh. It was bizarre. And all these adults are just sitting there like, holy crap, where'd that come from? And we're all looking in the corners behind us, you know, like, what? But there wow. was nothing. There were no voices when we were doing this. And then I was just thinking, okay, but, you know, he could have had those voices recorded. And then I heard that car on the gravel. Uh-huh. And I heard that sound when it turned, and I thought, oh my God, they were real.
You know, wow.
There are all these little kids. And at one point he said something like, do you want to say something to us? And you can hear one little voice said, let's go outside.
Huh.
Really clearly. And oh my God, the whole room was just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
That's awesome.
It was something. I'd always been fascinated by the idea of EVP, but that's the only time I've ever actually been present when something was recorded. And usually I hear EVPs, you know, I look them up online and I listen to them, and it's just so much of it is like static.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could kind of say maybe that was a word. This, honest to God, it was clear as a bell. It was these little kids talking to wow. each other, and one said, let's go outside.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Now, is there a history of children being associated with that building?
Yeah, apparently at one time it had been used as a school.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
The energy still remains. Fascinating.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
awesome. Lon, I know you're chomping at the bit to ask some questions of Karen tonight.
Yeah, you know, Karen, you had talked about your theories or your thoughts on the connection between the paranormal and UFOs. Can you give us some examples of that?
Yeah, well, I started going to a lot of UFO conferences and listening to the talks, and that kind of built on top of what I had already done on my own in the terms of paranormal research. And for me, I use the word research more for what I do, which is a lot of reading books, as opposed to investigation, which people I know do. They do more of like going into these locations with equipment and getting readings. And I actually don't do a whole lot of that. I've done some, uh-huh. but not much. So for me, I mean, I read what other people do and I learn from all of their collection of data. And it just occurred to me after I started, you know, learning a lot about the UFO research and investigations that there are some areas that are very similar and some where they're very different. And I think what started it was when I was doing my own radio show, and people would come up and tell me, oh my gosh, I got to talk to you about my story. I'm going to tell you what happened. And as they started telling me, I'd realize I was listening for certain details to kind of classify it in my head while they were talking. Because I'd be saying, okay, are they telling me a ghost story? Are they telling me about a UFO abduction or contact experience or a UFO sighting or, you know, what is this? And even if it was a spirit kind of thing, I'd be thinking, okay, is it a ghost? Is it like a person who used to live in that house? Or is it something demonic? Or, you know, what are we talking about? So I thought it was interesting that you can classify the different types of experiences in these different ways. And when I gave that presentation at the MUFON group, where Eric and I were both speaking at that conference, that's what I was talking about. That's what I thought it was kind of neat in the way some of the investigations are handled in the same way. A lot of the investigative techniques transfer from, you can investigate either kind the same way. But then what you find, you know, the details that show up very quickly, you can classify, oh, this is a UFO case, or this is an ET contact case, or this is more paranormal, spiritual. You know, one is physical. The ETs seem to be physical beings, whereas ghosts and spirits are not. Although both seem to be able to manipulate physical things. But generally, you know, when people talk about UFOs and ETs, we're talking about craft that come here from someplace else. And people will find things like burn marks on the ground, or you'll find, you know, evidence of a landing. And it kills me when skeptics are saying, well, where's the physical evidence? And then somebody like Ted Phillips will say, okay, here's 30 years worth of collected physical evidence. And they're still saying, you know, looking past him, okay, where's your physical evidence? I'm not going to believe this. Well, you know, here's somebody who's handing it to you. What are you going to do?
Do you think the craft that many people are seeing, or the UFOs many people are seeing, are actually terrestrial craft or more of something coming from somewhere else?
I think there's some of both.
Yeah.
And that's another problem. You know, so many people will, like, they'll solve one case and they'll say, well, that's it for the field. You know, that one case, oh, that was a plane. And say, so therefore UFOs don't exist. No. I mean, sorry. But, you know, and people are saying now that Roswell, the Roswell craft, was mundane. You know, oh, it was a military secret. It was this new thing they were developing. Okay, that was 60 years ago. Where is it? You know, what Russia's do we have dead. Now that can do what that thing was seen doing the night before the crash? Because we don't, you know.
Yeah.
Or they're not talking about it. We're at war. How come we're not using that if we had it 60 years ago?
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
Well, you know, it's just, it's common sense, and people don't think about these things. Now, I'm sure a lot of what's out there, you know, that there are things that are secret military aircraft that are being developed, and nobody's talking about them, that's fine. But there's stuff being observed doing things that even our super secret fancy military stuff can't do, even today. And, you know, when you see something like this, and so many people report seeing the same thing on the same day in the same place, and then the official story is, oh, it was the planet Venus. Like, what? Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the case in Ohio where there was one scene. I mean, somebody saw a fireball in the sky and they called the police thinking it was a plane coming down. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, my God, we're going to need ambulances out. There are going to be a lot of people. When that thing hits, we're going to need emergency workers. And so they were calling 911. This was not a UFO thing at that time.
Uh-huh.
So they called the police. The police come out. They're chasing it. They're trying to see where it's going to come down. And pretty soon they're thinking, that's not a plane. And then it makes a right angle turn and keeps going, same speed. They're at the edge of the precinct. They call somebody else. Another car picks it up and they start following.
Yep.
They ended up having police from, what, 5 different precincts in Ohio chasing this thing.
I remember that report very well.
Yeah. And one cop climbed a radio tower to get a better look at it. And he said, this is not a plane. He said, this is like Christmas lights. He's like, I don't know what this is, but it's not a plane. And actually, I heard the recording because, you know, he was hooked into the 911 dispatcher. And as he climbed and he's saying, oh, God, oh, my God, that's not a plane. Oh, my God, that's not a plane. Oh, God, please be a plane. You know, and the official story on that one was that that was the planet Venus.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was watching a documentary on that once when I first heard about this case. And my daughter, again, my daughter, was 7 years old at the time. And she's sitting on the floor coloring or something. She's not really paying attention. And at that, when they said, oh, yeah, the planet Venus looks like that sometimes. And she looked up at the TV and she turned around and looked at me and she said, what did he just say? And I'm thinking, they can't even fool a seven-year-old who hasn't studied this, okay? I mean, come on. Seriously?
Well, I think the funny part is when you happen to talk to military people who, mm-hmm. especially people in the Air Force, who have flown or have been up in the sky a lot, have a lot of time up in the sky, have seen a lot of weird things. And you say something to them that, you know, well, you know, the government says this and that, it's just a planet or it's just a satellite. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they all, and every time they always give you that look like, and give you that little bit of smile like, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they know. Yeah, they know. You know, the area you're from, because you live close, well, you live right beside Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
Now, Lake Ontario's right had a, had a history of so-called, and I think it's closer to Toronto or Hamilton, of underwater bases. Mm-hmm. People seeing these USOs, UFOs coming out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's fascinating. So many people have seen things going in and out of water. You know, mm-hmm. the first time I heard about a case like that, it was in an older book, and I can't remember now what it was, but I remember just being struck by this case. Someone in South America saw a craft coming down, and again, it was a similar kind of thing to the one in Ohio. He didn't think of it as a UFO, but he thought it was a conventional aircraft that was in trouble because of the way it was moving. It was doing this very wobbly, falling leaf kind of motion. And he said it really, whatever it was, it looked weird, not like a normal plane, but he didn't really think about it being space aliens or anything. He just thought, oh my God, somebody's in this little craft and they're having trouble and it's going to crash. And mm-hmm. so again, he tried to go to where it was going to come down so he could help whoever was in it. And it went down in a river. And so then he's thinking, great, now they're going to drown. You know, so right. He's standing there on the shore watching because he was hoping if this person came out that then he could maybe pull him out of the river. And he never saw anybody come out. Hmm. And like a day or two later, somebody else in a town down river saw a UFO come up out of the water and take off.
Uh-huh.
And it was almost like it was having problems and then it went down in the water. And then a day later, it was fixed and it came back out and went home. Because it was flying very differently when it came out.
Maybe they were vacationing.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, see, I've been following a phenomenon now for like 7 or 8 years of these manta ray like craft. Maybe they're cryptids. I don't know, but it doesn't seem that anything moves on it. But they're always seen near water or somewhere. They're you know, within a mile of water, and they come in all sizes, but they look like manta rays, and they're flying all around.
So they're in the air?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. And I think I've had at least 10 sightings now, but I've had sightings. Most of them used to concentrate in the mid-Atlantic states. I had one in Long Island. Then I recently had two in Texas. And I had one out in California, but but they're always near water.
Wow.
There'll be a lake or a river, and these things will fly across the road. Now nobody's ever seen them actually going in and out of the water, but they've seen them fly around, going across roads, and most of the sightings have been on roads. So I don't know what to make of this thing. But, you know, I have seen, you know, people have seen lots of these. And thank God they're starting to report on. I don't know how long this phenomenon has really been going on. But it's just another, it's a phenomena that I've been really concentrating on. And it just, you know, I can't really tell what it is. Are these UFOs? Are these some type of biological, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
that's,
it's
really
fascinating.
Odd.
Yeah.
Because you kind of wonder, I mean, if they're manta ray shaped, then, you know, are they a new kind of triangular UFO, which people have been talking about the triangles for a long time.
Well, the sizes run anywhere from about 6 foot across, which was the largest one, to anywhere maybe a foot across. There is a variety of sizes. The one up in Long Island, the person was on a beach, and it was at nighttime, and she saw this thing going across the water, then going above her. And when she looked up at it, it was translucent. She could actually see the stars through it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It almost sounds like it's a biological entity.
I don't know. I've talked to Ken Gerhardt about it. I talked to Nick Redfern about this. And we can't, you know, it's just impossible with what we've gotten to actually figure out what this is. Now, I do have a drawing. Somebody did a sketch of one of the early sightings, and it does. It looks like a manta ray, the color and everything. But that was during the daytime, and that was alongside of a river, on a road alongside of a river. But you know, it does fly around. You know, there's no real movement of the wings, or like, you know, on a manta ray, the wings on a manta ray. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. You know. But every once in a while, I'll get a report, and it's a real interesting phenomena.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny when you talk about it being seen on a road near the water. That just made me think: wasn't one of the early Loch Ness monster sightings somebody saw it actually going across the road?
Going across the road above the creek.
I believe in the 1940s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
1940s or early 1940s, maybe 1950 at latest.
Yeah, because most people think about the Loch Ness Monster as only being, you know, in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, like a piece of driftwood way out in the water that people are misidentifying. But this was an animal that was actually crossing the road.
Well, our good friend Katie Elizabeth was on the show a few weeks back talking about Champ, Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
And she reported that she had people tell her that it was seen outside the water. You know, coming up onto the shore. So, interesting. Very interesting. Maybe it's a biological entity that people are seeing that we just haven't discovered yet.
I'd really like to find out. But, you know, it's the damnedest thing. I'm still kind of amazed by it. When I got the first report, it was in a place called, Elkins, West Virginia?
Oh, yes.
Maybe that's not what it is. But it was near there. But anyway, some of these the early reports were coming from the Ohio River Valley, and one of them at least was near Point Pleasant.
I was going to ask when you said Ohio River Valley. I thought, oh my gosh, is it Point Pleasant?
Well, you know, Point Pleasant. Wow. I'm telling you, there's a lot of strange things that go on Point Pleasant. They just had a werewolf sighting there a couple months ago.
You're kidding?
Yeah, yeah. But UFO sightings are common. That river, the whole way from Wheeling area down into Cincinnati, it's just loaded with all kinds of sightings.
Isn't that funny? You know, the MUFON Symposium was right on the Ohio River a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh. Perfect place for it.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we had no idea.
I tell you, I think I myself personally think that that area is probably one of the hottest anomaly areas in the country, and I think it's been like that for at least a decade. There, I just get so many strange reports from the Ohio River Valley, even Mothman reports. I still get Mothman reports.
Still?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, see, a lot of things you write or that you read about Mothman, or that I read, I should say that the Mothman really wasn't seen after the bridge collapse.
people are seeing something similar. There's another phenomena that I actually had an encounter back in '88 of a humanoid like creature that had the same type of anatomy as the Mothman up in Pennsylvania. It's near the Conewaga Creek. They've had my sighting plus five other sightings in the last 25 years. This thing always shows up in the same river in like an 8-mile stretch. In the creek, an 8-mile stretch. And it's always described the same way as a humanoid with wings that shoots up straight in the air without flapping its wing, almost like it's got a rocket back to it. Dang. Amazing stuff.
I've just been hearing about the flying humanoids, I think, in the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
The American Southwest. But I had not heard about the one in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's kind of a private investigation that I've been writing about, and it just hasn't really taken off. But, you know, I have had a few people to follow up on it.
Yeah, if you remember, Karen, Stan talked about that at the symposium we were at.
That's right.
He talked about the gargoyle-like creature that walked across the road in front of the gentleman that was driving. Well, the witness has gotten in touch with Lon since then and has reported some other updates and other phenomenon that's going on in that area. And you mentioned, and we talked about this off the air, there seems to be some kind of connection between all this phenomenon going on, whether it's the UFOs, the ghosts and hauntings, the cryptid sightings. It all seems for some reason to be somehow interconnected.
Well, yeah. I mean, just now we're all just sitting here talking and we're each bringing up things that, you know, the others didn't really know about.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were talking, you know, about the Ohio Valley, I was just thinking that I didn't realize it at the time, but after I got back from that MUFON symposium that was right on the river, I realized that there was a very haunted site not too far from there that I could have visited, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a nightclub, Bobby Mackey's.
Oh, yeah.
It was about 5 minutes from the hotel where the symposium was being held, and that's supposed to be infested with demons, actually.
Yeah.
You know, there was a murder there, and I think there was a case of possession that took place there.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the most haunted places in the country, they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy stuff. And it's weird, like my case that I investigated today, we went there for a Bigfoot sighting, a Bigfoot report, but then talking to the family, we find out they've seen UFOs over the property, and they've had paranormal experiences. One of the family claims that their house is haunted. And it's really weird because it's not the first case that I've heard where this is going on. I talked to a family that lives in southwestern Pennsylvania in Fayette County in November that claimed they were having Bigfoot activity. So I went down to investigate. And sitting around the kitchen table, we were talking about some of the other strange phenomena. The fiancé captured some strange anomalies, strange lights on his cell phone that flew over their farm very low. And you can clearly see some kind of red ball in his picture. And it doesn't look like a star or a planet to me. But and then as we continue to talk, my last question was to the family, have you experienced any other unusual phenomenon in the house, paranormal-related phenomenon? And they kind of looked at each other, and they didn't say anything. But after we went outside to get our equipment to check out the property, the woman came up to me and said, I didn't want to say this in front of anybody else because I don't want them to think we're crazy, but we think the house is haunted. And I just kind of rolled my eyes and went, well, that kind of all ties into everything else that we've been finding out. So it seems like there is some kind of strange connection with the paranormal.
And it makes you wonder because some people talk about, like, I'm trying to think of the correct words here, like a portal opening up into another dimension. And that, you know, if a portal opens up to let one thing in, maybe other things can get in too. I have a feeling I've talked to somebody who, again, out west, described almost like seeing a portal open up and seeing a UFO come through, but then also seeing a Bigfoot-like creature pass through it.
Yeah, I believe that happened at the Skinwalker Ranch.
Skinwalker, that's what I was thinking of, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they would, like, look through the opening, and the weather was different on the other side.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's like a hole in the sky opened up, and it was a different time of day. The light was different, and the weather was different. How does that happen?
Those type of reports come in from a lot of other places as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed at some of the stuff that I get. You know, you always get the good with the bad. You got to kind of weed it out. Mm-hmm. But when you do check into it and you follow up on it, it's you know, people are experiencing these things. I mean, I don't think, let's put it this way, they are seeing something, and they don't know what they're seeing, but they are seeing something. Mm-hmm. You know, I have thought for a long time now that the cryptids in particular, but even spirits and UFOs and extraterrestrials, I think there's a connection somewhere. And I don't know how, you know, you can speculate on it, but there are certain areas, and there's some that Eric and I both know of, where all this type of activity happens as well. It all happens at one place.
Mm-hmm. So, I think in the early days, when people were first beginning to investigate all of these different fields, or each of these fields, because it was very separate in the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, it was a big thing just to have people accepting and admitting the fact that they believed there was something worth looking into.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've been doing it for so many years, we actually have made a lot of progress in collecting information.
Yeah.
Like, we might still not know who's driving the UFOs, but we've got types now. We've got logs of sightings. We can see trends. We can identify hot spots. I mean, we really have learned a lot. And it's interesting that now we've gotten to a point where we can look at all the data we've collected and kind of put it all in context together and start to say, you know, there's some crossover here. Uh-huh. You know, that we're seeing cryptid sightings at the same place and time as UFO sightings. And, you know, we're seeing these portals and we're seeing UFOs and Bigfoot in the same place and ghost activity in the same place. So at least now, you know, more and more people are starting to be able to say, yeah, I don't know what the connection is, but I think there is one. And to me, it used to be just the connection was that I thought they were all really cool. And I don't know what causes any of it. So.
Right.
Well, you know, if you go back and read the stories, or even if you get an opportunity to talk to somebody who knows the Native American lore, I mean, these people were seeing things in writing, you know, making pictographs or keeping it in you know, language and passing it down. They were seeing things that just seem unbelievable, but they do seem more believable now. I mean, you know, I don't know of one Indian tribe or Native American tribe in this part of the country, and there were a lot of them, that don't have some type of Bigfoot legend.
Yeah.
They
or
all
a legend
do.
About people coming from the sky. They almost all have a creation myth about the sky people
yeah.
or the star people.
Yeah, yeah. So there has to be something to that.
Well, that's just it. You know, I remember Bud Hopkins many, many years ago, and if mm-hmm. anybody listening who hasn't heard that name, Bud Hopkins was a very well-known UFO abduction researcher years ago. And I remember talking with him once, and he said that when John Mack, who became another very well-respected abduction researcher, when John Mack was first introduced to the field, and he came to visit Bud, didn't know who Bud was except that he was the guy who'd been working with all the abductees. And John Mack didn't think there was anything to it, and he wanted to know why Bud believed in this crazy stuff. And Bud said to him, I have gotten thousands, like tens of thousands of letters from all over the world from people who all describe very similar experiences. They don't know each other. They're not talking to each other. I've got a closet over there with something like 30,000 letters from different people, and they're all describing essentially the same thing. He said, I don't know what's going on, but he said, even if they are all hallucinating, isn't that worth looking into? Why mm-hmm. are they all having the same hallucination? I mean,
yeah,
either
and that
way.
Was before the internet as well. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he wrote one book. He wrote, I think it was Missing Time was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And after that came out, so many people wrote to him and said, oh my gosh, that happened to me too. And they're all writing their experiences, and they were all the same. And he said to John Mack, you know, he showed him his closet and he said, grab all the letters you want, whatever you want, at random. Just take them, see what you think. Mm-hmm. And he did. He took this huge sample of them and they all said the same thing.
Yeah, that's,
and he's
that's
like, okay, well, there's something here. No. So,
yeah,
it's the same kind of thing. I mean, you're saying so many people have had these sightings. Well, they're all seeing the same things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what it is, but something's out there.
Well, that's why I love doing this, because I tell you, you hear something different all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, in the long run, a lot of it is connected. Mm-hmm. It really is. You know, I think one of the early cases I had, as far as after I started doing the blog, was David Eckhart and his family. They were an abduction experiencers. They were being abducted for like 10 years.
Oh.
And I actually went into that case first thinking that it was a spiritual haunting, because some of the weird stuff I was seeing or finding out about, you know, going on the home. But when I started getting some of the evidence from David, some of the video evidence and some of the photographs, you know, I started changing my mind. These aren't ghosts. These are something else.
Yeah.
But you got to wonder, though, how many haunting cases may actually be some type of extraterrestrial or non-terrestrial being?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does happen.
Yeah, you do have to wonder, because, I mean, they apparently are physical beings, but they can pass through walls. They can walk through windows. You know, I've talked to a lot of people who, and they can take physical people through windows.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of abductees describe that. I was walking down the hall with these little beings, and then we went right out through the window. And an investigator will say, oh, did you open the window or did they open it? No, nobody opened it. We just passed right through the glass.
You know,
so many people have said that.
I asked Kathleen Martin about that, and you know how she thinks people can. I mean, how these beings can move through solid objects and
uh-huh.
take others with them, and she thinks it's a vibrational that they actually match the vibration of atoms with the, mm-hmm. themselves and the solid object and pass through.
Which makes sense.
It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense.
How else would you do it? And, you know, when our bodies, which look solid, are really mostly empty space, but they're these tiny particles that are spinning, it kind of does make sense that if we can get our particles spinning at the same speed and in the same direction as a physical object, like a wall or a window, we should be able to pass through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which sounds really bizarre, but yeah.
Yeah, it sounds bizarre, but yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Karen, I wanted to ask you, I've noticed this pattern kind of changing over the years when we're talking about UFOs. Starting in the 1940s, they were talking about cylinder, disc-shaped objects, like your typical saucer.
Mm-hmm.
Then it progressed on to people seeing the cigar-shaped objects. And then in the 1980s and 90s, it became the large black triangles. And now it seems the trend is these red fireballs, reddish-orange fireballs that people are seeing flying either in a pattern or together in a line or even individually. I've seen one myself in July of 2012. And I'm curious to know if what your thoughts are on these changing descriptions of what people are seeing in the skies.
It seems to me that we're still getting reports of all the different shapes all the time. It seems maybe there's a trend, you know, like the media tends to follow one and then the other. Maybe there's a sort of fashion in reporting UFOs, or maybe people, I think to some extent, people are likely to report something if they know someone else saw it. You know, if people will see something weird in the sky, and if nobody else saw it, they won't say anything. But if they saw a saucer, and then they hear that somebody else saw a saucer, then they'll say, oh, yeah, I saw that. So okay. Maybe that's why we get clusters of the same thing. But I mean, just a couple years ago here in Rochester, there was a sighting of a silvery triangle that passed over a community college not too far from my house. And in fact, later that day, I got a notification from the college, because my son was taking classes there, that they had a power outage. And I thought, oh, I wonder if that had anything to do with the UFO that was seen over. Which, of course, they're not officially mentioning, but it had been all over the news. And then later on, I was talking to my mom about the power outage at the school, and she said, oh, yeah, some people saw something. Oh, yeah, your aunt saw that. You know, she's out in Victor. And so apparently it was seen over my hometown, you know, 30 miles south of here, and they saw it heading toward the city. And then a half hour later, or whatever time it was, you know, it was a lot of people saw it passing over the city, and it knocked out power in that college and I think in a whole neighborhood in the area. And they were saying later, oh, yeah, transformer went out. And I thought, well, yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm not saying a transformer didn't go out. Right. But isn't it weird that it happened just as this UFO passed over?
I live in Baltimore, well, just outside of Baltimore, and for whatever reason, out here in the county, there have been a lot of these huge triangular craft being seen. But the thing is, they don't see them flying. They pop in for a couple seconds and pop out.
Oh, that's bizarre. I think Bud Hopkins talked about that, too, in his book, Sight Unseen.
That's been going on now for a long time. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the malls here close to where I live at, and it was actually reported in MUFON, this huge dark triangular craft showed up just hovering above the mall just for like 2 seconds and just left, and it just vanished. And they've been seeing this thing around, well, this part of west of Baltimore City now for almost a decade. It's really weird.
Really weird pretty much describes everything that we do.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we're into.
Yeah.
Well, it just kind of puzzles me that it seems like I was talking about these UFOs, they come in these different descriptions, and you made a very good point about how people kind of jump on the bandwagon. I saw that too, and it kind of gets blown out of proportion or snowballs. But it's also interesting that when you hear this type of thing going on and you read the reports on the MUFON website or other websites, and then you actually experience it for yourself and you see it, it adds a whole different perspective to the phenomenon. We touched base on about the military possibly having a lot of craft and developing craft, and why aren't we seeing this technology, 60 years later when we heard about it. And I'm pretty certain what I saw was not a conventional airplane or a conventional military craft. And I probably would have never said anything about it had there not been four other eyewitnesses that saw it along with me. So I don't know what I saw. I still don't. But I think it's fascinating that, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't follow UFOs that much. I'm interested in it. I look at it from time to time. I check into the phenomenon. I hear people speak about it, but I don't follow it, let's say, like you do or Lon does. But for me to have the sighting and then go look on MUFON's website and see that people are reporting the same phenomenon going on around the country around the same time, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I've seen things a couple of times. Once with someone else who was sitting right next to me, and we both were kind of saying, oh my gosh, do you see that? Yeah. You know what that is? I don't know. You know, I mean, we saw something anomalous. It was a rod or a cigar shaped UFO. But I couldn't tell you what it actually was. Another time I had an odd experience that I think was probably related to this sort of thing when I was younger. And when I was like 11 years old in Victor, and many years later, through another researcher, I met up with someone else who I knew in school, actually, not well, but I knew this person who also had a sighting around the same time. And neither of us knew about the other until something like, 15 years later. But I think it's very likely that we both saw the same thing on the same night.
Mm.
So that kind of thing always really freaks me out, even if it's not me being involved. You know, there have been several times when I've, like, talked to one witness who saw something in Syracuse on a certain day, and then a year later I might talk to somebody else who also saw something in Syracuse on the same day, and they describe the same thing. And you know they don't know each other. It's just, it takes it to a new level, you know? It's like, it used to be a fun game and kind of playing X-Files and, oh, isn't this neat? We're investigating this cool stuff. And then you find out that, oh my gosh, there's real evidence for this. Mm-hmm. And I still remember the first time I was in another state and talking with a witness who gave very, very good, solid information about what he had seen. And it backed up stories I'd heard so many other times. And for some reason, there was something about this one, and I'm trying to remember what it was, that just made me feel like, oh my God, this is really real. You know, this person, I think he was possibly like a military insider. For some reason, I really felt like if he said it, it's really true. He really saw what he says he saw. And I remember just sitting down on the bed of my hotel room and thinking, oh my God, what do I do? This is really, it's not a game anymore. This is real.
Fascinating
stuff.
I mean,
that was a long time ago, but...
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
It really is. Well, we've reached the bottom of the hour. It's 9:30 here on the East Coast, and we do have to take our last break for the show. So we're going to step away for a few minutes and let Karen regroup and let everybody in the audience regroup and get a cold one to drink and do what you need to do. And we'll be back with more of BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network. Our guest tonight is Karen Dolan. We've got more great conversation continuing after the break.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights? Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to tonight's program. This is Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, or as Lon and I like to call it, BTE Radio. We're live every Sunday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we're glad you found us here on the Para-X Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Karen Dolan is our guest tonight. A fascinating program tonight. We want to thank her for joining us. You can go to her website, KarenDolan.com, and it's spelled KarynDolan.com, KarenDolan.com. Or just go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. There's a bio there, a couple of lovely photos of Karen, and a link right at the bottom of the page there, so check that out. We're talking about all things paranormal tonight and how they possibly might be interrelated or interconnected, and it's been a fascinating show, to say the least. Karen, we want to thank you so much for coming on with us. We really enjoy the conversation we're having so far tonight.
Well, thank you so much for asking me. I'm really enjoying talking with you guys.
We always try to have fun here on the show, try to keep things light and like I said, kind of informal, and just sitting around drinking a cup of coffee and chatting with old friends. So you're amongst friends tonight on the program, and glad you're here with us.
Great. Hey, I have a bone to pick with Lon before we go too much further.
Okay.
I have to tell you, actually, this is a really funny story. Before getting on the show this evening, I was checking on Facebook, you know, just checking my messages, punching up my Kindle. It takes a minute to load, so I pulled up Facebook and put my Kindle down on the table, and then I was like clearing off the table, making dinner, and when I turned back to it, it had loaded this post that Lon put up with a picture of a gray alien, and it's like this huge close-up of his face and this eye, and it looked like there's an alien looking out of my Kindle at me, and I was like, holy crap, what is that? I called my daughter in from across the room, and she's like, oh my God, what is this?
Well, it worked.
Well, yeah, it did.
It was effective.
Lon has a habit of doing that.
Yeah, well. Well, geez, thanks for warning me.
He puts up some pretty good graphics for our guests and helps really promote the show, so we're grateful for that. But it gave you a good scare.
Oh, it did.
It gives really you something did. To look forward to. Now, see, Lon, you'll never want to come back on the show again.
Yeah, we'll get back.
Hey, I'm here.
That's true. Good point. Good point. You've been lecturing at some of these MUFON symposiums and congresses across the country. We lectured together in Pittsburgh a few years back. So what are some of the topics that you cover in your lectures? We talked a little bit about UFO connection with paranormal, but do you get involved with the abduction theory or close encounters of the third or fourth kind?
Yeah, a bit. I have talked actually last year. In May in Florida, I spoke at Paula Harris's StarWorks UFO conference, and I did talk a bit about the abduction phenomenon there. When I first got started speaking, the first time I ever spoke in public was at the Roswell 60th anniversary, so it would have been in, 07, something ending in 7. Yeah, okay. 2007.
Yeah.
1947 to, oh, geez, I needed more coffee. Well, I spoke on about the Teletubbies, oddly enough, because I had little kids who were watching Teletubbies, and at the same time, I'm reading all these UFO books, and I'm thinking, my God, they look like little aliens. And I would take my kids out to the playground, and I'd be talking to the other moms and saying, don't you think the Teletubbies kind of look like aliens? And they'd say, like what? Because they weren't reading the UFO books that I was reading. And then I'd go to UFO conferences and say, don't you think the Teletubbies look like aliens? And they'd say, the what look like aliens? They didn't have little kids and they weren't watching these shows.
They kind of do.
Yeah, they really do. And
weird looking things.
So I mentioned it to a friend, Guy Malone, who was in Roswell at that time. And he was hosting a radio show called Live from Roswell. And at that time, when he and I were talking about it, he had just been appointed to be one of the organizers for the Roswell Festival that year. And so he said, hey, that's an interesting idea. You want to come down and talk about it? And I'm thinking, I'd never done any public speaking at all at that time. And I said, no. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, hey, he's going to pay me my way to Roswell. Yeah, okay, I'll do it. And I love Roswell. It is just the most wonderful town. And the people are so nice. And I just love the festival. They're so great down there.
Very cool.
And, yeah, so my inauguration to public speaking was standing up in Roswell, you know, UFO capital of the world, and telling them all why the Teletubbies look like aliens. And I put in a little video clip, and you could hear around the room, everybody's like, oh, my God. You know, and they're all going, oh, my God, they do look like aliens.
Maybe that was their way of kind of easing us into the fact that aliens are around us.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering. I did sort of speculate on that. If they're just kind of skipping over adults who are already pretty critical and going straight to the kids and introducing these alien-looking things and saying, oh, look, they're fine, they're fun. And if they come and want you to come and take a ride with them, you should just go. I mean, seriously, nice. If you ever watch this, that's the kind of message you're getting. And then I did look back a bit, and I spoke about the CIA forming the Robertson panel and, you know, looking into whether UFOs were to be considered a threat. And they issued their report in 1953 and said, well, they're not really a threat, but, you know, it might be a problem if a lot of people get panicky and they all start reporting UFOs at the same time. It could really tie up our switchboards, and that could be a problem if there's a real emergency. So this report actually said we need to control the public's perception of UFOs. And they talked about working with media, and they mentioned Walt Disney and this brand new medium of television around that time. They said, you know, we really should come up with something that will control how the public perceives UFOs. And so there really was a precedent for the idea that maybe the Teletubbies program might actually have been one of those vehicles for controlling how the public views the whole issue.
That's a possibility.
You know, and it actually went over really well. They invited me back to speak the following year, and a man came up and spoke to me before I went up on the stage again. And he said, I heard your talk last year and I bought the DVD. And he said, I'm a police officer and I work on cases of like child abuse and, you know, this sort of thing, like exploitation of children. So he was really interested in this. And he said, I watched this DVD over and over and I tried to poke holes in it, like, you know, if I was making a case to take into court. And he said, I couldn't find any gaps here. He said, you made a good solid case.
Wow.
So I thought that was really interesting. I was really glad that he said that to me because, I mean, that's what I was trying to do. And
yeah.
It was so nice to know that an experienced investigator really went through it carefully and you know.
That's awesome. That is very cool.
Felt that the case stood up.
Yeah.
And I was glad he said that to me and spoke again because I had to boost. It was cool.
Now, you've been traveling around the country, as I said, speaking at different symposiums and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything scheduled to come up in the near future?
Actually, I don't have any speaking engagements coming up, but I will be working behind the scenes at the MUFON Symposium this summer in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
I work with the AV crew there. Amazing. Absolutely the most wonderful bunch of people. Just, they're incredibly skilled and talented. And, you know, I do things like, they say, I need this wire run over here, and I do that, you know, because so, I don't know anything about it, but I'm an extra pair of hands, and they're just terrific to work with. It's Mothership Productions,
okay.
And they used to work at the Laughlin Festival, or the Laughlin UFO Congress.
Yeah. Right.
And, in fact, I was on the board of directors at the at that UFO Congress before it changed hands and went to Open Minds, and, you know, they had their own board of directors, so the previous board kind of disbanded. Just terrific group of people, wonderful to work with.
And the Philadelphia symposium is going to be where?
I don't have the specific details up in front of me. I'm thinking Philadelphia, right? You know? It's the MUFON International Symposium.
Okay.
And usually it's out west, but it's nice that they're bringing it back.
Yeah,
back of the woods this year.
Yeah.
I've been trying to pull it up on the main MUFON site, and I'm just trying to do this right now while we're talking. I'm going to MUFON.com and see if they have the details listed yet about the symposium. I keep checking in.
I'm glad they finally updated the site.
Yeah, well, I know they've been working on making a lot of changes to it, and it looks great. And I might just be missing this, but I'm not seeing the symposium information. But I know that they're working on getting it pulled together and getting it up there. So if anybody is listening, they just want to... Oh, wait, there is a link. I just had to scroll down for it. 2014 MUFON Symposium. And it is going to be at the Crown Plaza Hotel. Oh, it says Cherry Hill, New Jersey. But
everybody keeps talking
about it like it's Philadelphia. So.
Well, that's close to Philly.
Is it very close?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know the area terribly well.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Excellent.
Yeah.
Can't wait. So I will definitely be there, but I might be... Sometimes I work the camera, sometimes I'm backstage, sometimes I'm in the vendor area, so...
Excellent.
So that'll be fun.
Let's talk a little bit about your radio program, Through the Keyhole. Are you still doing that weekly?
I haven't been doing it for about the past year. I've had a lot of... I've had some personal issues over the past year, and so I'm kind of on hiatus right now. But I started doing that in 2007, and yeah, it was weekly for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just really fun because, you know, when I first started that, I was on the Paranormal Radio Network, and there were a lot of terrific shows on there. And when I got started in 2007, there were shows that dealt with UFOs, and there were shows that dealt with ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And there were none that did both. You know, and my whole attitude was, I don't know enough about either one just to do, you know, just this week after week after week.
Sure.
Forever. And anyway, it's my show, and I get to talk about whatever I find interesting, and I find them all interesting. So, that, you know, whatever kind of caught my fancy, I'd call somebody and say, hey, you want to come talk about your work? So that was fun. I learned a lot doing that.
It is fun.
Yeah.
We've been doing our show since 2007 as well.
Really?
Yeah. And ours is along the same lines as yours. We, at the time, there were a lot of Bigfoot shows, strictly talking about Bigfoot. And, of course, there were the UFO shows and the ghost shows, and each one had their own specific topic. But there weren't shows, a lot of shows. I mean, there was Coast to Coast and Darkness Radio and a few others that were talking a wide variety of subjects and changing it up each and every week. And that's what I kind of wanted to do. I thought, you know, let's try something where we can just talk about anything. It doesn't have to be a set format where we talk strictly about one subject or we lean towards another subject. I wanted to talk about whatever we wanted to talk about that week, what we found interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we've done with the show. And we've been on the air since October 2007. This is going on our seventh, eighth year now. So,
wow. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Well, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but but Lon and I love it.
It's evolved.
It has. It has. And we have fun with it. That's the most important thing. Like you said, you have fun with yours, and we have fun with ours, and it's just a great way to learn. It's a great learning tool, a great way to educate people that are interested in the subjects, that want to learn more about them. That's why we have such a variety of guests on, like a great guest such as yourself to come on and talk about different topics so that if they have an interest in it, they might hear it one week, and then the next week they'll hear something else that might capture their interest.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it fun, too, when, you know, you come across something either on another radio show or you just happen to see a book on ghosts or demons or UFOs or whatever. You know, I'd pick up a book and I'd read it and I'd be thinking, wow, this is fascinating stuff. And I'd check and see who the author is and I'd, like, email them and say, hey, you want to be on my show? And then half the time they'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd love to.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a hoot. Because then I can say, oh, my God, I read this most amazing book last week, and it was so much fun. And here's, you know, we talk about the book. And then I'd get to ask all my questions that came up when I was reading the book.
Yeah. It's great for us as well because we get the chance to talk to a lot of folks that, as Lon has put on our banner, the movers and shakers in the paranormal community. And we get to talk to those who are doing the research, who are writing books or putting out documentaries or doing field work or whatever the case may be. And we get to ask them questions that we want to ask. Plus, we try to ask questions we think our audience would want to ask as well. And it's a great learning experience.
Yeah, it really is. And that's exactly what I would do, too. I'd be trying to think, okay, if you know, what questions might somebody out in listener land be asking. And that's where I love the chat rooms too, because I would always go into the chat room and I'd be kind of monitoring that. And it's funny, when I first started, I wasn't even able to keep track of the time. You know, I was always going over at the end because I couldn't like have a conversation with my guest and watch the clock.
Right.
And, you know, after I've been doing it for 5 years every week, I'm sitting there, I've got the chat room open, I've got my site, Paranormal Radio Network site was open, I'd have like a window open where I could look things up while we're talking about them, and I'd be carrying on a conversation, and I'd have a little sheet of notes that I'd jotted down, you know, like, oh, remember to ask this.
Yep.
And, you know, it became like a nerve center, and I was watching the clock, so, you know, it's just practice. You get good at it.
Yeah, I come with a background in radio. I went to college for communication broadcasting, and I spent about eight and a half years actually in FM radio. Doing, yeah, country format, adult contemporary, top 40. I did some AM radio, and I had to get out of it because it just didn't pay. And in 2007, I was jonesing so badly for radio to get back in. That's why I did. But what I like about it and what I really enjoy is the fact that people enjoy what they hear. They like the topics. They like the guests. They find the subject matter fascinating and the conversation. Nothing pleases me more than to know people are enjoying the program. Whether it's a great guest like yourself we have on, or Stanton Friedman, or Stan Gordon, or John Zaffis, people love to hear the conversation from the people that they've read about, as you said.
Yeah.
And that's what I think I enjoy most about the show, because we all know we don't get rich from this. we don't make a
don't
dime.
I love it when skeptics say, oh, they're just in this for the money.
Yeah.
Like, what money? I missed that bus. Where's the money in this?
Exactly. I missed that train a long time ago.
I've never seen a check or anything come in. It's just like Well, we need to spend this. We need to spend that. Well, that's just the way it is.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
but
do it
it's
out
fun.
Of love and dedication, and because it's a hoot. And I love talking with people who are interested in the same kind of things that I'm interested in. You know, and that's
well.
What I think is the most fun about going to conferences too, is that you get to spend a few days talking to people about things that are really fascinating, and the people you're talking to don't roll their eyes when you say it. That's the coolest thing.
I'd agree.
For 2 days, nobody rolls their eyes.
I'd agree. Well, Karen, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, and it flew by so incredibly fast, as I said it would. And every time we have a great guest on, it does, Lon.
Oh, yeah.
It does. So I'm going to ask you the same question I ask of all of our guests. Would you mind coming back on the show with us in the future?
I would love to, anytime.
Well,
seriously.
Thank you. We would love to have
you
back.
I didn't know that you had a background in radio, but I'm not surprised because this is so polished. And you guys both, you're so professional on this, and it's just a joy to be working with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the comment. We try. We don't get paid. I don't think we're professional, but we try. But it was a real pleasure talking with you again. I really enjoyed meeting you at the Pittsburgh Symposium, and hopefully we'll get a chance to meet up in the future at another event where we can chat some more and try to catch up. And I want to wish you continued success with your lectures and your research. I find it fascinating, the connection between the two, and I want to wish you the best, and hopefully things continue positively for you.
Yes, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And, you know, best of luck to you guys with your show, although I don't think you need it. You guys have the skill going for you.
Thanks. It's all Lon. But thanks for coming on again. We do really appreciate it, and we'll get you back on in the future. We'd love to continue the conversation with you.
Fantastic. Anytime.
Have a great night, Karen. Take care.
You too.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Lon, we've come to the end of another fantastic program. Karen, what a great guest tonight on the show. A lot to talk about. And as usual, as we said, time just flies by so fast.
Yeah, it goes by very quickly. You know, when you're talking about subjects that you enjoy and know a bit about and you connect with the guest, it does go by quickly.
It does. It definitely does. And a lot of great compliments and a lot of great feedback in the chat room tonight. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. As usual, we appreciate each and every one of you, and we appreciate you guys tuning in, supporting us each and every week. It's great to have listeners out there. When I started this, I honestly thought maybe we'd be lucky enough to get 5. But you proved me wrong, so thank you for that very much. Another great guest on the lineup for next week's show, and I'm very much looking forward to this. I got to throw props out and say a special thank you to Amy Perry, who's not with us tonight. But Amy was very influential and had a hand in getting our guest for next week on the show. You'll remember him. He was on the show Ghost Hunters, Ghost Hunters International. Patch Ministries is a ministry that he currently runs, and he's a motivational speaker. The one and only, the rock star of the paranormal, Dustin Perry, joins us on the program next week, Lon.
Yep, I'm looking forward to the show and see what this guest has to say. It's always enjoyable getting different guests and getting different opinions, and that's what we're all about.
It certainly is, and we certainly do enjoy it. We have a lot of great guests that come on the show over the years, and we enjoy talking to every one of them. Also want to remind everybody that next week, this coming weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, is the Cabela's event, the Strange, Rare, and Unusual Sightings event taking place in Wheeling, West Virginia at that Cabela's store, the Cabela's Outdoor Outfitter store. Jeff Meldrum is the keynote speaker, along with Steve Calls, Billy Willard, Stan Gordon, Doug Waller, and myself will be there talking about Bigfoot and strange animal encounters. A lot of great vendors. The meet and greet room is open starting Friday evening, so go to Cabela's.com, check out their website, go to the stores, look under the Wheeling store. All the information is there. It's free, folks. Absolutely 100% free and open to the public. Come on out, check it out. I'd love the chance to meet you in person, say hello, and chit-chat about the paranormal.
Well, it looks like it's going to be a pretty neat event. I'd get into Cabela's. I'd be shopping. I wouldn't be doing anything else. This place drives me crazy.
That's why we draw the big crowds. They know what to do, Lon. They know what to do. They put a couple Bigfoot speakers in there, make them a little bit interesting, and then, boom, they're shopping in the store.
Yeah. So, yep.
There you go. we're out of time. We've got to hit the road and call it a night. We want to invite you to keep it right here to the Para X Radio Network for more great programming coming up after us. We're here every Sunday night, live 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Check out our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Drop us a note at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. What do you say, Lon? We call it an evening.
Talk to everybody next week.
Guys, have a great night. We'll catch you again next Sunday night right here on the Para X Radio Network.
Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Ron, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on the Para X Radio Network.